Hi, I'm Dr. Matt Tyra. I'm Director of Public Health and Chief Medical Officer to the Isle of Man Government.
Hi, I'm Susie Saunders and I'm the Lifestyle Services Manager for Public Health, and part of that role includes managing the Stop Smoking Service.
Hi, my name's Liza Munro. I'm Project Lead, midwife for maternity services in Manx Care.
Okay, I'm Jan Canty.
I'm Alex Canty. I've been a non-smoker now for 14 months thanks to the government's project that made something that I'd wanted to do for so many years come true.
Welcome everyone. We are second in this series of Health Issues podcasts, and this time a different topic. Of course, each one is a different topic, and we are looking at quitting smoking, something that's been going on for quite a few years. A lot of people now trying to quit the habit, and many successfully have. Stoptober, an annual Stop Smoking campaign. It's seen millions over the years quit successfully as a result of this great campaign. And perhaps we could start with you, Matt, then. So just maybe we could start at the beginning and say, obviously, at one stage, smoking was almost ubiquitous and almost, I think, go back long enough, seen as being good for your health. We know now that's definitely not the case. What are the problems experienced by regular smokers?
So I think we've got a really good opportunity with where we're at now to potentially see the end of smoking within this generation. We've been seeing smoking rates come down significantly. I mean, it was 10% of people in the Isle of Man were smoking in 2022, and we're now down to just above 7% in 2024. The real challenge with smoking, it remains the single biggest driver of preventable ill health. It affects every part of the body. Obviously, most people will be aware of its effect on the lungs, but it has an effect on the heart, the brain, the blood vessels, and just every bit of the body is affected. So consequently, for everyone that quits smoking, the impact that they can make on their own health and the health of their community and their family can be really significant. Ultimately, tobacco and tobacco smoking takes away people's choice over what they're able to do. It's so addictive. And that means that it is still a significant killer. It fuels illnesses, and it particularly affects people on the lowest incomes. And I think that that's a really unfair position that people have been put in by the tobacco industry. I think it's really, really key to emphasise that tobacco as a product that is on our shelves, if used exactly as instructed on a packet of cigarettes, it will kill 2/3 of its users. There's no other product that is out there as a for something that people can buy that has that level of direct harm to people. So not only is it 2/3 of people who use it will die as a result of using it as intended, but all of the potential knock-on consequences to their day-to-day health, their likely need for hospital and medical services, the likelihood of them needing support from social care in later life, and not enjoying the number of years without a health problem that had tobacco not been something which took away some of that, some of those choices that they should have been entitled to through a normal, healthy life. So I think we've got a real opportunity to see the end of smoking and to make smoking obsolete within this generation.
And do people now, I mean, do you think a lot of people really do, even hardened smokers, do people really want to quit and just are struggling to find an avenue of doing that?
Yes, absolutely. So there's a survey been produced and reported on by yourselves this morning that has made it really clear that public attitudes towards smoking are really supportive of measures to, first and foremost, protect young people from ever getting hooked into nicotine addiction, but also around a change in perception towards a lower willingness to accept smoking in public places and smoking in confined spaces. Alongside that, a greater willingness to look at things which restrict access to cigarettes and other tobacco products. So it puts an interesting position forward in that we've had the highest rate of quits last year that we've ever seen through our smoking cessation service. We've got a population who are ready to see a change in terms of how smoking is perceived and how access to tobacco occurs. But also we've got the currently the lowest percentage that we've seen. So it is something which is getting less and less. And with every Stoptober that comes around and more people deciding to quit and to quit with support, the more people we see achieving a permanent quit, and we will see those rates continue to go down. And it is the best thing that they can do for their health.
We'll come to talk a little bit more of Stoptober just in a minute, but we do have two reformed smokers, non-smokers, call them what you will. What do you call yourself, Jan? Do you call yourself a reformed smoker?
I'm an ex-smoker.
Ex-smoker. And you did smoke for quite a while.
Half a century, yes. Wow. I started when I was 3. I never thought I'd stop and quit for you. They quite literally have saved my life. And I am deeply, deeply grateful because I couldn't do it on my own. You know, all the stuff's there in the chemist. You don't need a prescription. You can go buy it. I didn't want to. And it's really expensive as well. And I never, ever thought I'd stop. I just thought I would do that until the day I died. And the fact that Quit For You got myself and my husband free of tobacco, and that was 14 months since either of us have used tobacco. And it's a wonderful feeling. And the difference it's made to my health and his health, it's wonderful. And we're so grateful.
And what was the catalyst? What suddenly then, after all this time, made you think, I've got to do it?
To be honest, Alex had wanted to stop for years. And
if it's two of you, you can't stop singularly. Mm-hmm. You have to both stop together or you'll fail at it. And any attempt for 5 years previous to give up smoking was doomed to fail before it started when one of the partners is a smoker. You know, so it becomes something that you have to do together. The catalyst was a simple device, a carbon monoxide alarm. We went to Susie's Quit For Life, is it?
It's called
Quit For You, the clinic. And she made us do a carbon monoxide test, and the alarms all went off. We went home and Jan tried the carbon monoxide alarm at the fireplace and it went off. I think that was the writing on the wall.
I was profoundly shocked when I realised that I could, with my own breath, set off a carbon monoxide alarm. That was the depth of the pollution in my lungs. And I felt like I'd been punched, and I haven't touched tobacco since. That was the end for me. I only did it for a laugh.
Well, I had smoked for the 20 years that we'd been together, mm-hmm. and I had previously been a non-smoker for 8 years, and I had been a smoker for about 10 years before then. So
I was quitting. A bad influence.
But quitting was always something that I wanted to get back in my life. I wanted to get the slavery to nicotine out of my life. Every smoker knows the damage that they're doing to themselves. Every smoker hacks up in the morning and knows that this is untenable, knows that this is something they shouldn't be doing. However, it's damn hard to give up. And to give up on your own, I had previously done, and it was very, very difficult, and I went through hell that first time, but it was just grim determination. This way is a scientific method that's been worked out for you. It's the easiest way I've ever given up smoking, compared to the cold turkey method of so many decades before. It is. I'd recommend it to any smoker, because they all know that they have to give up. They all know that they're killing themselves. They all see that look in their kids' eyes when they go blue, choking and coughing. And
we got guilt tripped to hell by our son.
Yeah, our son would come
up
to us and
say,
"You have
Susie
to give up."
First.
Yeah.
And it was him. He bullied us into going to it.
Yeah.
He did.
Bigged up the program and said how much he's now. He is another stubborn SOB. And the fact that you made that easy for him, I was impressed with that. So much so that I could badger Jan into doing it as well.
Pick it in there. So you've got the magic touch there then, clearly.
Susan quite literally has got our whole family off to go the cigarettes.
The programme works. So it really does.
It's a successful programme. And we heard about the CO test, Susie Saunders from the Allemand Stop Smoking Service. Tell us perhaps first a bit. This CO test seems to really, you know, for Jan and Alex, it's a case of, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
How does this work then? Is it just tell us more?
Okay, so I think as Jan and Alex have said, and being an ex-smoker myself, I get it, I understand. Stopping smoking is difficult. It's a very, very complex addiction. When most people, when they attempt to stop smoking, often don't feel massively confident about it, or indeed don't really want to. It's a fact that you reach a point in life where you think I've got to do this, whether it's for health reasons or because you may have a change of circumstances, you may be wanting to have children, etc. But no matter what your reasons for wanting to quit, that never makes it any easier. And as human beings, I think sometimes a little bit of evidence can really help, because not everyone has immediately obvious side effects from being a smoker. And one of the things we can do to show someone what the effect smoking is having on them is to allow them to do a CO reading. So it's a little device, and what happens is I ask the person to take a breath. They hold their breath for 15 seconds and then they blow into the machine. And what the machine does is it gives you a reading of the level of carbon monoxide that's currently in their bloodstream. So what that machine will pick up is everything that's happened in the last 24 hours. So obviously carbon monoxide is in the air. No one gets a zero on the machine because there is pollution in the air. So generally, rule of thumb is a non-smoker would have a reading of under 4. So it's based on parts per million. So a non-smoker would have a reading of under 4. The majority of smokers will have a little panic smoke on the way to their appointment. Most people think that we are like the stop smoking police and we're going to make them immediately stop smoking on the spot. But it doesn't work like that, I assure you. But what that reading does is show them the damage that carbon monoxide does. Now, basically, what carbon monoxide does, it makes your blood thick and sticky. So what that does, it puts your heart under tremendous pressure because it's now pumping the equivalent of treacle around your body. So over the years of being a smoker, your circulation becomes compromised. So what that then does is create an environment in your body which is now prone to inflammation. The blood doesn't flow to all the extremities anymore. So you will notice as you get older, you become prone to having very cold hands and feet. Your gums can start to recede, so your teeth can become wobbly. Premature aging of the skin. Worst case scenario, some smokers will lose a limb through smoking. And this is all caused through carbon monoxide, which is one of the biggest problems with smoking. So the great news, so that's all horrible, and you think, oh, goodness me. The great news is within 24 hours of stopping smoking, that level dramatically reduces, the blood starts to thin, and the body starts to repair itself.
Within the first week, we did a test again once we'd been on the patches and the under the tongue and the little inhalers that we get and all the various parts of the system. Within a week, we were about half of the level, under
we were
half
seven.
Of the level. Yeah, seven.
And 20 we were 18, something first yeah, time, 20, 18, seven the next
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
And then after that, we were between zero and four.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks of. Was enough for the lungs to actually repair significantly from that damage. which is incredible when you think about it.
Yeah,
and Matt, I don't snore anymore.
You don't?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So it's an added bonus.
We don't wheeze going upstairs. Yeah. In fact, we can go upstairs and it's nothing.
Yeah.
I have a very physical job.
Yeah.
And I used to constantly, Alex or one of the staff would come to me and say, you need to sit down, Jan.
Oh, yeah.
Because I sounded like Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And one of them would come and say, Jan, just take five. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen anymore. I can breathe. I can breathe for England. It's awesome.
Massive difference. And Matt, you're going
to... Yeah, just to add on the carbon monoxide front. I mean, it's one of the reasons that it's important to get things like boilers and and other appliances serviced and make sure that if you've got a fire at home, that the flue is clear and all of that kind of stuff. Because the other thing it does is it displaces oxygen from your blood. So you can't, if you've got carbon monoxide in your blood, you can't carry as much oxygen to your muscles, and it needs that so that you can do physical activity and all sorts of things that keep your well-being up. So it's just, it's another example of those sort of chronic things that build up. Smoking related diseases are not one thing in isolation. It's this whole array of impacts on your body. And again, the fact that you felt better, especially doing physical activity and things like that, quite so quickly is a real indication of how unwell and how used to feeling unwell.
It was so normal to me. I didn't register it at all.
It is boiling.
It was just
the frog.
Normal
really
to feel lousy.
Is, you know?
And the difference it's made in every aspect of our health. I have always suffered with Raynaud's disease. I get my hands and feet disappear.
Yeah.
Not so much this year. Quite often I'd wake, nearly every morning, I'd wake up and my legs or feet would be asleep and numb. Doesn't happen anymore.
No.
My entire body has changed and improved from stopping smoking. And I just, if you told me that, I wouldn't have believed you. I would have argued that that was BS. But in every way, my skin, in every way, I feel so much healthier.
Also, you realise how much you stink. Because when you meet someone, and it's quite rare because it's a small percentage now, it's so unfashionable. When you meet someone that smokes, you smell it from 10 foot away. You know, and you get up close to them and it's not nice. And giving up, you don't want to be that person that's suddenly a born again, vigilante. But when you smoke, you don't realise how badly you smell. And that's just.
Or your house.
Yeah, and your house.
We had to sugar soak walls, ceiling, woodwork, wash all the curtains. We had no idea that the place just reeked. And a couple of months into stopping, our son came into the house one night and he said, you'd never know anyone smoked in this house.
Wow.
And that was lovely.
Yeah, that was unprompted as well. He didn't do that just to make you happy. But
nobody ever actually came in and went, wow, this place stinks. But it did.
Yeah.
We just didn't notice.
Absolutely.
And our clothes, my hair, everything.
And everyone's too polite to tell you stink.
Yeah, nobody would mention it to you. And it is so lovely.
Not
although there are lots of nasty things I can smell now that I couldn't before.
God, it isn't in the first place.
Douglas Corporation, somewhere down at the Castle Mona.
No. If this stage maybe Liza, because we've been hearing a lot about obviously the individual and how it affects, as Alex was saying, Jan there, and we've been hearing about how it affects your lungs, your breathing, your blood, your teeth, your mouth, all these things, your clothes, your house. But of course, smoking and pregnancy, you often hear this coming up, and it sort of alters the ball game altogether, because you're no longer talking about just your own health, you're talking about the health of an unborn as well. I mean, the dangers of smoking, pregnancy, you would think everyone's aware of those now, are they?
You would like to think that, but I think sometimes, as Jan and Alex have said, sometimes you don't necessarily want to hear it, and sometimes I think people feel a little bit defensive about it and judged, and that's something that we want to get away from. As Dr. Tyra said, if you're thinking about oxygen that is not going to a person, if you imagine that with a baby on board. And it's the biggest cause of preventable complications within a pregnancy. You know, we see it. We can see it in a placenta. We can see it with the way that that pregnancy grows. You know, the complications that are on board with that are massive. You know, so we realise it's part of the Saving Babies Lives bundle that we've now implemented and are working closely with you know, the team as well for our women when they come, and families. It's not just, we don't expect, we want them to be as a unit and to give up as a unit. So the complications that, you know, that women have to go through are massive. You know, you've got a sudden infant death syndrome, you've got placental abruption. The biggest thing that people don't realise is fetal growth slows down because the oxygen is not getting through to this baby. And the consequences of that is obviously, as we'd said before, we have to then give aspirin to make that blood less, you know, thick, because we need to get that blood flow going through to the baby. So you tend to find you've got smaller babies, you've got premature babies. And sometimes, you know, people don't necessarily, I think they get a bit fearful or they get a bit worried. Or, you know, the common thing is, well, my mum did with us, so we'll be fine. But unfortunately, this is the situation. That's what happens.
So what happens now if a woman comes to you and is pregnant, presents as pregnant, comes along and, in filling out the forms, declares herself to be a smoker? Does she get instant advice?
Or? So basically what we do, we'd set up a lovely little system, haven't we? Mm-hmm. So automatically we do the CO readings as well, and that's at every antenatal clinic, but especially at your booking. So we do a referral straight away now, so it's an opt-out system rather than we used to do an opt-in. So you automatically are referred to the Quit for Two team, and basically Susie and I work very closely together to give support, advice and guidance. Sometimes, you know, that fall, people decline, but we need to give them informed choice. They need to understand the risks of what they are declining. Mm-hmm. So, and that's really important, that as a team, we work together to make sure that somebody fully understands that potentially their pathway in pregnancy will change. We're going to, you know, maybe do more scans and things mm-hmm. like that. So it does affect how we treat and what that pathway mm-hmm. looks like for them.
And there's something really important about the kind of preventative impact of giving up during pregnancy.
Yeah.
It's not, but it, obviously the impact that can have for the unborn baby is enormous, but it goes beyond that as well, because of course once the baby's born,
absolutely,
you know, a child born into a household where smoking is really common inside the house is likely to have, well, a greater likelihood of things like asthma and other respiratory diseases, more likely to have chest infections, more likely to have wax ears or even glue ear. So a whole host of different things that can affect their development, affect the number of days that they might end up not being able to spend in school because they've got to go to healthcare appointments, all sorts of things along those sorts of lines, combined with the fact that actually smoking is really expensive, like really expensive. Yeah. So if you're a child born into that household where a large amount of the household income is potentially going on smoking, what is not being spent on the child? And as I said at the beginning, there's, from a preventative perspective, there is a disproportionate impact from the way that smoking is marketed and aimed at households who are on lower incomes anyway. So there's kind of this disproportionately unfair effect on children. And interestingly, again, from where people are at culturally, measures that protect children are the ones which people are most in favour of. Yeah. So I think there's something really strong there about how we move that culture forward so that communities where a smoke-free childhood and a smoke-free life is normal and expected is the right thing to do.
So what sort of, have the numbers, do you think, have they decreased over the recent years, pregnant women who come along and surely you would think would realise that being pregnant, you really do need to stop?
I would say over the years, I mean, it's been quite hard because we didn't have the you know, the opt-out system. It was pure choice. Now it's, the opt-out, basically. In April last year, we had three women who were smoking at booking and at delivery, there was none. So it was a massive, you know, we were absolutely delighted at that. And, you know, not everybody will give up smoking, but we just need to have those conversations throughout the pregnancy to have that understanding around, we're not here to judge, we're not here, you know, to make anyone feel bad or anything, but we need to give you the information that is up to date and relevant for you to make the healthy choice for your pregnancy, for you and your baby going forward. And that's really, really important. So we just need to continue to do that, really.
Can I just say, I wish this had been available when I was carrying my son. There was no support then. I knew that if I smoked, I was going to damage my child. And much as I loved a cigarette, even I have my limits of how far I'll go.
You wanted to be
and
more.
And I wanted my child so much more than I wanted to smoke. And I did the only thing I could think of. I went to the hospice and I got them to give me some sponsorship forms. Because whenever you try to give up smoking, whatever the reason, your smoking friends, like something happens, you'll have stress, you'll have a nasty situation, and they'll go on, have a fag. I won't tell anyone. Mm-hmm. I won't tell anyone. If those people have given you money to not smoke, they don't offer you a cigarette. If they've coughed up hard cash for you to not smoke, they don't do that. And that was the only way I gave up smoking I actually gave up smoking about 4 months before I got pregnant. And then I carried on. When my son was 3 months old, I went back to work. 15 minutes in, I had a cigarette in my hand and I was back.
You don't work in accounts anymore.
So. No, I don't. I don't. But that was what I had. It was the only way that I could find a way to stop people offering me a cigarette, because they do.
I think that's a really good illustration. One of the things that we talk about, and if you've seen the public health strategy, there's a diagram which talks about the things that influence what's normal in your kind of friendship and social and community network. And those things come together really strongly to influence your day-to-day behaviours. And smoking accounts for 10 to 20% of your kind of lifetime health-related outcomes alongside your other behavioural choices. But it's that reinforcement of it as a coping mechanism or a social activity or something that you do when you have a drink or any of those sorts of things that keep that normalised.
There's little groups in offices. Most people don't smoke anymore. So in offices, there's little groups and they all go for a fag, same time in the morning. They all meet downstairs, have a little chat outside the front door. And they'll do it again after lunch. They'll do it again in the middle of the afternoon. The non-smokers get really peeved that smokers can just sod off for like 10, 15 minutes, whenever they feel like it, and stop work. When they don't do that. The non-smokers don't do that. There's deep resentment there. Mm. But you get people, you could set your clock by what time they're going to go outside, and they go out together and have a little chat, and it's normalised. And that needs to find a way to not happen.
And this is the bit around transitioning to communities where smoke-free is the norm, rather than, you know, these pockets of continuing kind of supporting each other to continue smoking rather than supporting each other to quit. And there's something around embedding that within communities as well, because of course it's not, we've talked about kind of the risk to the population and to individual health and to children's health, but it's also really important to remember that smoking is a really significant factor in fire-related accidents and litter and other things that make communities feel less safe.
Yeah, there's no good side.
No.
You empty an ashtray into a bin, make damn sure it's nothing lit in there.
Absolutely.
Because 10 minutes later, that bin's on fire.
Even in the addiction, you know that's the truth, that there's no good there, because what you're doing is you're smoking to satiate the nicotine craving.
Absolutely.
Not to give yourself a boon bonus. You're not doing that. You're just stopping it from jiggling you up. It doesn't calm you, it stops the nicotine from beating you up. So you're a slave to it.
Absolutely.
The thing that I want everyone to know, that wants that smokes is how easy it is to do it using the system, how easy it is to quit.
Absolutely.
And the biggest fear you have as a smoker is, I can't quit, I'm not strong enough to quit. This, you know,
it won't last, it won't and last. Then I'll just be a failure.
And instead, I'll just compartmentalise that in the back of my mind for a future thing that I'll do. Mm-hmm. Whereas what I found with this process, I got really into it straight away because I had the under-the-tongue nicotine delivery system. Yeah. What that did for me was allow me to actually access more nicotine than I would have via cigarettes or tobacco of any type. So after a couple of weeks, I had to turn around and say to Susie, I'm actually not weaning myself off this spray. I'm actually developing an absolute love of the spray from the nicotine addiction. And what we did was we increased my patches and removed the spray completely, and I didn't miss it. And a week after that, the patches were down again and then down again and then down again. And by the end of the process, when you remove the patch, you don't even notice.
Yeah.
You'll do your day's work and you go, oh, I didn't even bother putting it on today.
How many times did we say, oh, we forgot to put our patches on?
Yeah, at the end of
the process. We'd actually forgotten. We'd be going to bed and they weren't there to take off.
And it really is that easy, which is why people are locked in this idea that it's going to be hard, because if you do it on your own, it is bloody hard. But this
was the service.
They know what they're talking about is what I'm putting across to everyone. And it's
not just the here you go, these will help
you. Yeah, they work with you.
It's being done, and it's a designed step by step way to get this darn stuff out of your brain.
Yeah.
And it works. Well, and it is
a 3-month process.
It's not difficult.
Yeah.
It's so much easier than you'd think. If you're trying to do it on your own, you're not going to get anywhere.
But
with the service, it is so simple. It's quite shocking.
And I think
stood back and thought, why the hell didn't I do this in the first place?
And I suppose that's being stressed in the theme for this year. Let's quit smoking together, Susie, because that's very much coming through very strongly here. That try and do it, as Alex says, on your own, you're really up against a brick wall. Do it with support and with peer support and such like, then this really makes all the difference. And this is something that the service really works on, I suppose.
Excels.
Absolutely. Can I also say, coming back to the baby thing, and I know this sounds horrific, but when I was pregnant, several of my friends were also pregnant and carried on smoking. And their reason for that was they didn't want to have to squeeze out a big baby. And I'm looking at them and I'm like, mm-hmm. Can you even hear yourself?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like the very fact that you're shrinking your baby with cigarettes, doesn't that tell you that might be a bad idea?
But this was in an age when 30% smoked. There was so much more community of smokers to hold up their addiction.
You smoked in pubs, you smoked everywhere, you smoked in restaurants.
It was ubiquitous at one stage, wasn't it?
It was everywhere, and it was just a natural part of life.
Yeah.
Both my parents smoked.
Yeah.
None of my family smoke now. They, my brother, my sisters, my brother's wife carried on smoking, and she died. The ugliest death you could imagine was lung cancer.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
Definitely not.
That's a horrible way to go.
So, Susie, the things like weekly drop-in sessions, workplace quit programmes as well, these have got to play a vital part.
Absolutely. So the key thing with the service that we provide in the Isle of Man, and I just want to say here, we've recently undergone some rebranding within the service. So just in case anyone is a little confused, Quit for You is now called the Isle of Man Stop Smoking Service. So you'll hear some people refer to it as Quit for You. It's all the same thing. So we've just had some rebranding with some fantastic new colours and new logo and stuff. So we're now known as the Isle of Man Stop Smoking Service, but previously Quit for You. So the first thing, and I can't say this enough, what I want to put across is we are not the Stop Smoking Police. So myself and my advisors are here to support anyone who wishes to make a quit attempt. We are not here to bully people, to tell you off. That's not how it works. We are not going to try and force people to stop smoking. It doesn't work. You've got to want to do it. But that doesn't mean you have to be confident that you can. All I ask is that you're willing to try. Once you come along and see us, We will support you to make that magic happen. And key to our success rate, I believe, in the Isle of Man is how we structure the service. What we offer is approximately 12 weeks of support. And the key thing is to explain why we do what we do. You often hear people misunderstand why you would use nicotine replacement therapy. They wrongly believe that nicotine is harmful. Nicotine is, it's not, it's a stimulant. It's basically a massive stimulant. It's highly addictive, and it's the part of the cigarette, the main part of the cigarette that gets you hooked and makes you come back for more. So the first thing we have to address is the fact that smoking is both a psychological addiction and a chemical addiction. If you try to go cold turkey and tackle both sides of that addiction at the same time, it's pretty much undoable. If you have initial success, it's very unlikely that you will stay smoke-free for long. Most smokers that attempt to go cold turkey will return to smoking within a year. However, if we cushion the withdrawal, and if we ensure that we close your now active nicotine receptors in your brain in a slow but controlled and safe manner, you will recover. So it's about splitting the addiction into two parts. So the first thing we're going to do is address the nicotine side of the addiction. And we do that by giving you either access to prescribed medication, such as varenicline, or we use nicotine replacement therapy, and we match what you would have got nicotine wise from your cigarettes using both oral and transdermal patches. And once we've got those nicotine cravings under control, so we're going to basically stop you experiencing any chemical withdrawal. We're going to get control of that. You're going to stop smoking abruptly. And from that day, we're going to transfer that nicotine addiction onto nicotine replacement therapy. And what that will do is enable you to deal with the behavioral side. So you're going to experience, you're still going to have some mild withdrawal symptoms, because you're going to have some psychological things going on. So during our sessions, we address those. So we look at triggers. We look at those times during the day when you're most likely to want to light up. And we talk about what we can do to make that more comfortable. But the key thing to remember is the idea of stopping smoking is always 10 times worse than the actual doing. Mm-hmm. And the majority of our clients come back the following week and say, I can't believe how easy that was.
Mm-hmm. Truly.
That's the truth.
Truly. Yes,
yeah.
For sure.
It's about getting those nicotine levels right and controlled, and controlling those nicotine receptors that, incidentally, are activated after about 3 incidences of smoking. So if you go right back in time to when you first started smoking, by the time you'd lit up your 3rd cigarette, you would have activated these nicotine receptors in your brain. That's how addictive nicotine is. So it's we don't take it lightly. We throw a lot at it to keep those receptors quiet whilst you make the behavioural change. Because we underestimate how powerful the addiction is on the psychological side, because most smokers have smoked from a very young age. So most smokers pick up smoking in their early teens. And what we then do is learn to deal with all of our emotions and day-to-day behaviours with cigarettes. So if you imagine, a smoker has basically taught themselves to deal with everything with a cigarette. So for example, you feel, as a smoker, you'll think, I feel sad, I'm going to go and have a cigarette. I feel happy, I'm going to have a cigarette. Yeah. Someone's made me angry, I'm going to go and have a cigarette.
I'm hungry, and I haven't got time to eat, I'll have a cigarette.
Absolutely. So everything you do, you back up with a cigarette. So when that's removed, you don't know how to deal with that emotion, because for all your life, you've just dealt with it with a cigarette. You've removed yourself from the situation and lit up. All of a sudden, your coping mechanism is gone. And it's frightening. It's like a big gaping hole. You don't know what to do. But that's where we step in, and that's where we support you, and we teach you how to deal with this. Alongside using medication, which is really important, we get you through it and we get you off it.
And that's something, support is the right word. And it feels like a support group, like you sign up to have a free support person who's there for you, who knows what you're going through and is able to temper the actual course to the person. We felt at all times that we were well supported. It feels...
There's such... I have to say, each of the visits that we made to Susan and each time we went, it was the positivity.
Yeah.
There was no judgment, nothing negative at all. Just enormous positivity. And the very first time we went, we were nervous. And it's in the old hospital building. So we parked at the back and we walked up the stairs and we stopped halfway up to go. Then we carried up to the top of the stairs.
Hello,
I'm not even kidding. To go. And then we realised, that was maybe third visit.
Yeah.
We'd skipped up to the top of the stairs. And then we looked at each other and went, wow.
Yeah.
But we genuinely, every time we had an appointment with Susan, we genuinely looked forward to it.
Yep.
It was such a positive thing that from the moment we arrived to the moment we left, it was just sheer positivity. Yep. And it just made the whole thing painless.
Yep. Because we got freedom back. With removing nicotine, you're no longer a slave to something that's oppressing you, that's killing you.
I can see a difference in our bank balance, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
We spend a lot less money. Yeah. Smoking is darn expensive now.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And I've seen the difference to our finances.
I think that's another aspect of it, as Matt was saying. Yeah. Again, it is hugely expensive now. I mean, $1 million question, lest it's forgotten, of course, is how do people, I can imagine people listening to this and thinking, this is exactly what I need. How do they access it?
Okay, so to be honest, probably the easiest way to do it is if you Google Isle of Man Quit Smoking. If you put that in, it will immediately bring up all the details on how to access the service. So you can either telephone us, you can email us, you can self-refer online. So there's a referral form there that you can fill out. We run clinics all across the island. And we have also recently recruited to the team because the service has now become even more popular, which is fantastic. So we have more people coming on, which will mean even more clinics. We try to be as flexible as we can. We offer evening clinics. We offer telephone support for anyone that cannot, for any reason, access one of the clinics around the island. You name it, we do it. We're as flexible as we can be. We have done home visits on occasion for people that are housebound. We are also offering for Stoptober out to workplaces. So if your workplace has 10 or more smokers that would like to quit, we will come to you during October and we will set up a quit club so all your staff can quit together, which is always nice. We do offer groups as well. We offer drop-ins. So you name it, we've got it.
All bases are covered.
Absolutely. There is no excuse not to get in touch. I can't say it enough. Don't be afraid. Get in touch. We'd be delighted even just to have an initial chat. So even if you think, you know what, I don't want to commit yet, but just a little bit curious, give me a call.
And something I actually didn't know until we were doing this podcast, which was lovely to hear, and that clearly you and Liza work hand in glove together.
We do.
From the women's department and people coming along, so that, again, a woman, maybe a smoker, she's fallen pregnant and thinking, where do I do this? There is help there.
Yeah. We have, there's going to be an opportunity any time that anybody decides that they want to quit. We will have that conversation with them every time that they're attending for their antenatal clinic. You know, we want every baby to have the very best start that they can. You know, the sooner that somebody quits, every day would get better after that, and it's better for the baby as well. So, you know, we will offer any support, we will do any referral, and obviously, you know,
absolutely
working alongside closely.
And it's free. Yes. The service is completely free.
Which is amazing.
Well, when you look at what the things like the patches and all the individual nicotine substitutes,
it's hundreds of pounds.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to £3.85 for an NHS script, and you've got everything you need.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it is to do it away from the service, it costs a lot.
Yeah.
To do it with the service, it's pennies. And anybody out there that's not sure, do it. Do it now.
Can't have a stronger recommendation than that. There was one thing I wanted maybe to throw in your direction, Matt, before we finished, was because I could hear, again, people listening and thinking, where do vapes fit in with this? I mean, they were sold some time ago when they first came on the scene as being a safe alternative, a transition away from smoking. Now people don't even smoke, they just vape. Where are we on that now?
So whilst we don't have a mechanism at the moment for counting the current number of people that vape, we do recognise that a lot of people are vaping. I think the most important thing is that it remains the fact that use of smoking and use of any kind of burnt tobacco is the thing that will do the most damage to your health. Vaping can be a way for people to transition away from smoking cigarettes and other forms of tobacco. It's the tobacco that will do you the most harm. The likelihood is that vapes are safer. However, anything that you decide that you're going to take in where there is some chemicals that you are taking in that you don't quite know what that is, particularly if you've acquired a vape from a unlicensed provider or anything along those sorts of lines, is risky. That being said, if you currently smoke and vaping is a way that it's going to support you to quit, if you currently smoke and you want to step down to a vape, that would be a sensible way to support your quit attempt, if that's the right thing for you. If you currently vape, we would be very happy to look at how we can support you to quit vaping. If you don't smoke and you don't vape, do not get into the addiction cycle of nicotine. And also, don't get into the economic thing, because at the end of the day, all of this costs money. And ultimately, you buy into an addiction, which is, you know, that one can talk about things like the commercial determinants of health, which is where you think about a company that produces a product which is exclusively designed to either harm people or to get them addicted to a chemical and harm them economically, let alone psychologically and chemically. Don't have your freedom taken away because there is an imperative to keep buying tobacco and tobacco-associated products. There are a huge number of myths out there around all of this, that vaping is just as harmful as smoking. It isn't. That the cost of the tax revenue from smoking is far greater than the amount that's spent on treating smoking-related diseases. That is absolutely, categorically untrue. It is far more expensive to services to look after the consequences of smoking. But even more than that, the consequences to each individual who has been exploited by a predatory industry to get hooked on a drug and then subjected to all of the consequences of inhaling carbon monoxide, tar, benzenes, all kinds of horrible, noxious chemicals that will do significant harm to you over the course of your life. People's choice has been taken away by being manipulated into starting doing it and then hooked in by an addiction. And I think that we need to end that unfairness that people have been exposed to for far too long. As I said at the beginning, this is not a product that we would allow on our shelves because it kills 2/3 of its users. If this were a new product, we wouldn't allow it onto shelves. We wouldn't subject ourselves to getting hooked into this cycle. But we have an opportunity with where we are now. We're down to 7%. I think if we continue to see the supporting people to quit, we could see ourselves in 2030 with a smoking rate on the Isle of Man of less than 5%, with almost no people under the age of 25 taking up or starting smoking. And I think that the consequences of that for the population is it's an incredible benefit to our health and to the health of all of us across all of our lives, especially if we have those smoke-free communities. I think just to come back to the vaping element of it, as a way to reduce smoking, yes. To start, if you don't vape, I wouldn't recommend anybody get hooked into that cycle of addiction and financial expenditure.
There's a lot of fantastic work going on. We just touched on it there. I think, again, the message has just come across strongly. Obviously, Stoptober runs throughout the month. People will be giving up throughout the year, hopefully, in taking this message. You're there, Susie. Liza, you're there as well.
Absolutely.
For any help, any time, you can get in contact.
Absolutely.
And I think if we take anything from this, it's good for your health, it's good for your pocket, it changes your life. We've heard from Alex and Jan. It's not just a sort of, oh, I've stopped that habit. It changes your life dramatically in all sorts of ways, as you said there as well.
I had to have an operation on my vocal cords in December. And the only reason I needed to have that operation was because a lifetime of smoking had left me with a condition called Reike's oedema. I was able, very, very lucky, I got the procedure done in December, and I was one of the people who managed to get my voice back, because I had literally got to the point where I couldn't talk for more than a few hours a day. I got my voice back, I got my life back, and I wouldn't have even been considered for that procedure if I had still smoked, because I would have just developed it straight away afterwards. Yeah. And it would have been a pointless waste of time and money. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I had the surgery was because I'm a non-smoker. And the only reason I'm a non-smoker is because Susan made me into one.
Yeah.
And I am so, so grateful. We've had challenges this year. In recent months, I lost my best friend, and I still didn't want a cigarette.
Yeah, that says it all. Thank you.
Yeah, it says it all. It's a wonderful service. We're very lucky to have this, and as Jan was saying, through the health service as well, help is there. People, don't try and do it on your own. Help is there via Susie, via friends. People like Jan are inspirational in giving you that information as well. I'm sure we'd talk to anyone by the service there. So, for now, we could talk all evening, but Matt, Liza, Susie, Jan, Alex, thanks very much for talking to us on the Health Podcast about Stoptober.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.